Beware, spoiler phobes, you've stumbled upon a storm of spoilers.
Devil Hell's Kitchen.
The smartass detective.
The man with unbreakable skin.
And the kid with a glowing fit.
Who the hell are you?
I'm the Immortal Life.
This week, we take on the Netflix-Marvel crossover event, The Defenders. We've covered every preceding Marvel Netflix show, and now it's time for the big one. If you haven't seen The Defenders, don't worry. We'll have general thoughts before spoilers. We're not ruining. We're just witnessing the life and times of the worst Iron Fist.
The smart-ass detective.
The man with unbreakable skin.
And the kid with a glowing fit.
Welcome to a storm of spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I had any of the superpowers of the Defenders, I would have Daredevil's power of having Catholic guilt while beating the crap out of everybody who opposed me.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and if I had the superpowers of one of the Defenders, it would be Jessica Jones's alcoholism. Oh, wait, I already do.
And my name is Neil Miller. And if I had one of the superpowers of the Defenders, I would have the Punisher's rage issues. Does he count?
I think he counts.
He's part of the same universe, but I don't think he's a Defender yet. If we were, or when we do, get the inevitable Defenders too, it would depend on how Punisher's future series goes, but that's jumping all the way to our second segment, Neil, and we're here right in the intro.
Spoiler alert.
So for those of you who maybe joined us for our Game of Thrones coverage, and there are a lot of new people, we are here to give you a taste of the off-season tour before we jump in and do a Game of Thrones full season recap and look ahead, crazy town theory, answering questions, extravaganza. This is our little bit of crack to get you hooked on what the off season is going to bring you, because it's going to be a long off season and we're going to cover a lot of different pop culture. So here we're going to talk about Marvel's Netflix crossover series, the culmination of the giant Marvel Netflix deal that has been extended, but we'll get to that. It's The Defenders. It's a miniseries. It has all your favorite heroes from Netflix, Marvel, other series. Has some of those other problems. Not all your favorite heroes. A lot of them. Has a zombie Elektra, which is always
nice.
But before we get into all of that, we start every show by reading some reviews. Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
We do. We've got a couple negatives and one positive. Three stars from A. Shapiro says, annoyingly negative, and the commenters are kind of arrogant in the way they put forward their opinions as though they were objective assessments of the episode. So there's that. Which maybe means I need to start prefacing everything that I say with, in my opinion. in my subjective opinion. All right.
Well, it's just one man's opinion, but
I don't know about you guys, but I think. Okay. And then this one is three stars. I don't know what this person's handle is. I can't pull the words out. Okay, not for me, but maybe for you is the title of this review. I don't doubt they've read the books, just not sure if they were paying attention. Too much trying to apply real world to the fantasy world. A 15-minute talk on how a dragon has holes in his wing but can still fly, or how a dead dragon can still breathe fire. Dudes, it's fantasy. I enjoy the times I do. Joanna can get a little defensive. Insert barstool sports joke, but no biggie. So I don't know what he's talking about. I never get defensive. God.
Also, I can confirm that I have read the books, but probably wasn't paying attention.
Accurate read, three-star reviewer.
I definitely do get defensive.
That one cuts deep.
This one's from Kay Adamo. 5 stars. Love you guys. This is someone named Kenny who said, met you all at the con. That is how I first found out about this podcast. I love being spoiled, so I always love the storm part of the podcast. I hope to see you guys at the con in Dallas next year. And I thought that would be a fun one. Thanks, Kenny. That would be a fun one to read to sort of segue into some things Neil might want to say.
Yeah. Speaking of the con, we're going to go to that.
Which con is that, Neil?
It's the Con of Thrones.
Oh, the Con of Thrones.
We talked about this last week on the show. This will be, obviously, hopefully, we'll get another fun live show there. Nothing's been booked yet, obviously, but we're keeping our schedules clear. It is May 24th through the 27th.
You stall. I'll look up the dates again.
It is going to be in Dallas, Texas this year. It was in Nashville last year. This year it's at the Dallas Hyatt, Grand Hyatt, Super Hyatt.
The 25th through the 27th.
Ultra Hyatt.
At the Mega Hyatt.
The Mega Hyatt in Dallas, Texas.
And the tickets go on sale September 25th.
Yes. So if you didn't go last year, it was a lot of fun. That is the message here. And if you did go last year, you already know it was a lot of fun, so you should also sort of get it.
Let me tell you the ultimate reason why people should go to Con of Thrones Part G this year.
The ultimate reason.
I found out last week, I think after we recorded our show, maybe before, that the women, a couple of the women who record the Burlington Bar reaction videos that you might have seen to Game of Thrones are very popular on YouTube. They came to Con of Thrones. They met Paula Fairfield, the sound designer who works on Game of Thrones. She was also at Con of Thrones. She gave a great presentation. They met there. Paula liked them so much that when she needed screams for the undead dragon Viserion's cries, she called those girls and a couple of their friends, and they got like cameos, screaming cameos in the finale. So here's what I'm promising you. If you go to Con of Thrones, you'll probably end up in the season 8 finale. Just kidding.
Yep.
Can't make that promise.
Big promise.
But it will increase your possibility 100-fold, I think, if you go to this convention and rub elbows with the creative people who make Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and hopefully with the long off season, we'll get even more Game of Thrones creative people this year. We had a good turnout last year, but hopefully it'll be even better this year.
It's one of the only situations in life where if a stranger comes up to you and says, I want to record your screams, it's actually going to get you in Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God. Dave, please don't wander around the convention asking people if you can record their screams.
Can I record your screams? I have a podcast.
We'll walk around like we did last year. I'll carry a sword, and you walk around and ask people if you can record their screams.
Did you see Texas's open carry sword slot?
Yes.
You could go anywhere with that now.
You could open carry a real sword, not even the foam sword that I have.
Which just means I just have to get mine on the plane, and then my problems are over.
Anyway, so that's Con of Thrones. Make sure that you keep an eye out for the tickets, things. You can follow them on Twitter at Con of Thrones, or we'll retweet them when things happen. The other two things I wanted to go over, we don't have any emails or we're going to read tweets sort of as we go through the show. But one, our t-shirts are still available for a few more days, potentially several hours by the time you listen to this. So make sure you go over to cottonbureau.com and search A Storm of Spoilers and get one of those dope t-shirts. And never forget that we are on Spotify, NPR One, Stitcher, and as one person on Twitter pointed out this week, Google Music. We are on the Google, of course. So there's all kinds of different places you can get us. You can recommend us to your people who use Spotify and whatnot. So that's really all I got this week. I promise during the off-season tour we'll have more to talk about. This is actually where we put we talked about this already, where we will give updates about things we've talked about previously in the off-season tour, and we'll do Game of Thrones news and whatnot in this segment. But there's really not any Game of Thrones news because it just ended. So
we'll save all that for next week, and we talked about this already is sort of how we want to start talking about the Defenders this week. Guys, what did you know about the Defenders before you watched Marvel Netflix, Marvel Netflix's The Defenders?
Like the comic book version of The Defenders?
Or just in anything in general. Before you watched the show, you were aware it was going to be, I know, a crossover between these other heroes. And I know we all suffered through Iron Fist together. So I'm assuming that means you guys also have been watching all the other Netflix series.
I was very aware that Danny Rand was the immortal Iron Fist. Because I watched that whole series.
He says it a couple times. I knew that it would be a sort of an Avengers-like crossover event. And one of the reasons why a lot of people felt like this is exactly why they do crossover events, right? Is to hold you hostage on all the other series. Cause like, if you're going to watch, if you love Jessica Jones, let's say, and you want to watch The Defenders because Jessica Jones is in it, does that mean you have to watch Iron Fist? Even though you don't want to understand The Defenders? I don't think you do, actually, but, you know, a lot of people felt like they did. That's why a lot of people watched Iron Fist.
They want you to think that you need to.
They want you to think that you need to watch everything, and you don't. I'm just here to tell you, you have a choice. But yeah, so what I knew going into the series, and I hadn't done like a lot of research, is like, and I think Dave might have told me once upon a time, I knew Sigourney Weaver was our villain. I was pretty sure Elektra would be back in a villainous role because that seemed to be where the end of Daredevil season 2 was going. And, you know, that we'd get our four main characters teaming up. I knew that they shot it before the backlash to Iron Fist so that there would be like, we saw some lampshading of how stupid Danny Rand is, but maybe not as much as it wasn't as merciless as it might have been if they had shot it after everyone decided Danny Rand was stupid. They would have their own Battle of New York sort of situation in this season. So some sort of like big elemental, probably involving the hand battle.
The hand.
Yeah. you want to know what I knew about this?
What did you know?
This was very important to me, is that, you know, after having such a bad taste in my mouth about Iron Fist, because let's be honest, it wasn't great. We actually did an episode of last off season, pretty much dedicated to shitting all over.
I forgot that we did that.
Oh yeah,
I remember that.
People did not like that.
So I was paying attention to the showrunner situation and the fact that Scott Buck, who was the showrunner on Iron Fist, has since moved on to the Inhumans.
Yeah.
For better or worse, I guess. Probably for worse. And that the Marco Ramirez and Douglas Petrie, who did Daredevil season 2, were coming in for the Defenders. So I was like, well, at least the fights will be good.
And they were. So, okay.
Yeah.
So this is sort of like our calm version of this discussion, right? Is that we wanted to sort of talk about, Dave's prompt, what we knew about Defenders going in. Whether or not, like, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched The Defenders yet, which is kind of fun because sometimes you guys listen to episodes about things you've never seen. You know, we're here with our recommendations for you, whether or not you should watch it. Then we're going to get into sort of like our main review and then looking forward, which might be a little spoilery because Dave knows things. So,
Dave doesn't know a lot of things.
Dave knows
a lot of business things this week.
Dave knows comics. So, you know, if you don't want to like have any inkling of like where the series is going after Defenders, then you might want to jump off there, or you might want to stay for the ride the storm. Who knows? But so my question to you guys is like, do you think, how heartily would you recommend this to someone who like really liked Daredevil, really liked Jessica Jones, liked Luke Cage okay, and didn't like Iron Fist, which I think is the general trajectory of what it sort of like peaked at Jessica Jones. For me, it peaked at Daredevil season 1, but and has all been a slide downhill since. But for some other people, peaked at Jessica Jones season 2 and then has been sliding down since. Would you recommend The Defenders as something that they should watch?
Yes, I think you could watch The Defenders having not seen any of the other things, but being a fan of comic books. Like, I think I said it on, I was a guest on the Nerd It Here weekly podcast and talked a little bit about Defenders, but the way this series is structured is a lot like how comic book crossover or limited series are structured, where it's like, there's a cover that says like 2 of 8. And so you know exactly how many are coming and you could watch the story slowly come to like a big splash page every once in a while, but mostly have these interweaving hero on hero things. And I think because it's structured that way, there's a lot of exposition that could be made into how the characters face off against each other. So I wouldn't necessarily say that you have to have seen any of the Marvel Netflix series if you want to just jump in and start with the Defenders. That kind of makes the other series prequels, but I think it's this is structured as much as Marvel structures all their Netflix series that you could jump in and have what fun there is to have with it, and then decide where you want to go from there, maybe based on interactions here. Just don't go to Iron Fist.
Neil, what do you think? Do you think people...
I would, yeah, I could take it from a different approach. Let's say you are a fan of like Daredevil, Jessica Jones, like I was. I mean, I don't have any comic reference for these characters, really. I would, it falls under the you might as well category, where it's like,
that's okay, so much so Netflix content, though, isn't it? Like, doesn't that?
Sure, but like? Okay, so you know you're going to sit down on a Saturday.
Why not?
You know you're going to watch something on Netflix, and you did like Jessica Jones and Daredevil. I think that you might as well watch this because. And let's say you liked only one out of the four, you still get enough of each character and enough progression of each character's story, which I think the show this season does really well of giving you enough of whatever you liked from those characters. And and I think that, you know, we can look at essentially Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage as like three solid, you know, solid TV shows coming together. Mm-hmm. So there's a good chance that you will get enough out of this to be like, okay, that was fun.
Like there are other series on TV that have perfect, you know, first seasons that defend into nothing. Like, I feel like something like The Leftovers, I haven't watched, but everybody always tells me like the first season is drastically different from the second because they're adapting. Like, basically, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil all had single seasons. We tend to group them together because they have a lot of the same problems, which seem endemic of, like, the production structure, not necessarily of those television seasons, right?
Well, that's what, I mean, my is more like, I'm working on my philosophy, and I it's been my philosophy, actually, for a little while, for these Marvel Netflix shows, is that, I mean, A, as I've said, and many millions of people have said, they're all too long, so it's nice that The Defenders is shorter. It's 8 episodes, right, instead of 10. And then for me, the real make and break for one of these seasons has been the villain. Does it have a strong central villain? And that's why I think Daredevil season 1 is the best, because you have Vincent D'Onofrio's killing it in that season. I might want to revisit Jessica Jones. I don't know if I was just like overhyped or why I was disappointed, because David Tennant's quite good in the villain role, but something about that first season of Jessica Jones didn't quite do it for me. But I love Jessica Jones in The Defenders. Luke Cage is like one third of a great television show, because like when, you know, Mahershala Ali is holding it down as your villain, like that's a good show. Maybe that's like half the season, right? And then it just gets to be an incoherent mess because they lose, spoiler alert for Luke Cage, they lose their main villain, and then it's just like three villains, and it's really messy. And then Iron Fist, I would also say, is just quite messy. So
who was the villain in Iron Fist?
Like
Danny Rand. That was the funny thing.
No, you know, it's what's his name, the Australian actor.
Father, yeah, guy.
That's who. You know, in Daredevil season 2, I am on record as not liking the Punisher stuff, but I really liked the Elektra stuff. So all that being said, ramble. The Defenders, shorter. Sigourney Weaver, killing it. Elektra, B villain, killing it. I really loved a lot of that stuff. It's still messy. It's not as clean as either Jessica Jones or Daredevil, but I think having the central menace of someone bringing their A game, like Sigourney Weaver, and then I think everything that they've done with Elektra, I have loved. So the fact that Elektra has so much to do and has such an, I think, compelling arc in this season, maybe not a very human arc, but a compelling one nonetheless, is fascinating to me. So I would definitely recommend The Defenders for that reason. You can go up and like get a soda while they try to shoehorn all the like B characters in their little side plots. They're trying to like get in all your favorites, but it's just like, it just felt like filler to me. So,
well, I think that's part of the problem. If we want to start talking about the actual series,
all right. So this is
of
where
The Defenders.
This is where we roll to our actual review, including spoilers of The Defenders.
Correct. You could probably have to see that. That's the other thing, is that the nice thing about these Marvel shows is I don't feel like they're super spoilable like the Marvel movies, because they like lack some MacGuffin for the most part. Like, I don't care about dinosaur bones, and neither does the show.
The substance is the MacGuffin, right?
Aren't those dragon bones?
Yeah, what did I say? Dinosaur?
Yeah,
you said dinosaur bones.
Yes, I'm sorry, dragon bones. But like, it's more about, I think, that the climaxes of this series are any time the four characters are working together in any combination. And then, like, the sad parts are when they are like, we're going to spend a lot of time talking to all these side characters in the police station. And, oh, we don't trust Danny because this is the time we have to go back to the building for some reason. So I kind of feel like in a full arc, once it, like, it's really enjoyable going through it because you're seeing all these personalities ping off each other, but at the end you're like, well, they went to the building, then they left, decided they were together, and then it took them like another three episodes to get back to the building. So I kind of feel like that's the Marvel Netflix production schedule being like, well, we have these three sets, but the last one costs a lot, so let's spend some time in a police station before they think, let's just break out of this police station, which is obviously the first thing that you would think about them doing. So a lot of good things about The Defenders, and all the negative things I don't hold against like the showrunners as much as it's like, that's also how comic book crossovers are structured, and that's how Marvel Netflix series are structured. So in that sense, I've almost began to have a Pavlovian dog response to the stalling fishbowl episodes. Which I think this one is actually called, like, Fish in a Jail. And I'm like, oh, God, here it comes. I'm just going to watch a whole bunch of talking between a whole bunch of people stating exactly where I know their character allegiances are, because I've been watching the rest of the series because you want me to binge it, so I haven't been stopping. I don't need reminders like it's a television series.
Right, but like some people, like, I appreciate that that exists so that if, you know, like I said, if people want to skip Iron Fist, they can, and they can just come into this, and, you know, and then Jessica Jones will like, and Luke Cage will both kind of like make fun of Iron Fist, and it'll all work out. That being said, couple things. One, I want to give a lot of credit to The Defenders for actually having some like consequences to killing off a main character like Elektra. I'm thinking about you, Jon Snow. The complete lack of consequence of your death. You know, like the Elektra coming back is sort of how I hoped. It's very Angel season 3, which is sort of how I hoped, you know, Jon Snow. I mean, not that Jon Snow would become like evil necessarily, but that he would come back fucked up and like weird, you know, like you should come back from death fucked up and weird is my opinion. And the other thing I wanted to ask you guys is like, did you have a favorite? I feel like, you know, they were so, you know, Dave will get into some of the business of the future looking of the franchise. But it feels like there's, you know, laying groundwork for potential other mix and match spinoffs that we might have. I know that Luke Cage and Danny Rand have a Heroes for Hire series in the books, so it felt like they were trying to set those two up as a couple we might want to follow. Misty and Colleen have the Dragon? Is that what it's called? Daughters of the Dragon, sort of like mystery show, detective show could happen potentially. But I loved most of all, and I'm curious what you guys thought, was Jessica and Matt. I mean, like, those are your ace players, and when they were playing off each other, I thought it was the best of the series. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I actually just like how Matt is with someone else that isn't like in love with. Like, he was good when he had that dynamic with Elektra, and he wasn't, you know, like, he was Daredevil, but pre-flashback and, like, against the ninjas in the glass apartment.
Yes.
And I think he has the same chemistry with Jessica Jones by the end, where Matt does well when he has a peer, I think, as a character, because he's not pure, but he's like the Superman presence in the team up. He's the one that's going to eventually, he's going to have the conscience, and he's going to, you know, dress up in a suit and that sort of thing. Whereas everybody else sort of gets to ping off that, and then Matt doesn't respond like with Wolverine anger, so it just makes him like this funny little character who'll beat the crap out of you and is secretly probably the most talented one, since we see him like defeat Iron Fist. The immortal Iron Fist was downed by the blind man. So, yeah, I definitely like him as the center of the group.
Yeah, and really quickly, before I ask Neil the same question, every single Karen Page scene was a disaster, which was also kind of true of Daredevil Season 2. So, if they want to kill that character, no offense to the actress. It's the writing. They can't write her. She's, like, just a wet blanket. No. And it's really disappointing. All right, Neil, what do you think?
Listen, I like Matt and Jessica Jones. They're good. Charlie Cox and Kristen Ritter. Very strong. But there's a pairing I would rather see.
Oh, yeah?
This is not superhero pairing. It's more of a fun people pairing. And it's, I want more Foggy and Jessica Jones.
Yes.
Or just some Foggy and Jessica Jones. Like, I want Foggy Nelson in Jessica Jones Season 2 as, like, her handler at the law firm.
Carrie Moss?
Yeah, well, Carrie Moss can still be there, but, like, I want Foggy to be, because now Foggy's kind of, like, the go-getter for Carrie Ann Moss's character, so it's, like, I kind of want them to interact more.
This was good, Foggy. Like, I really love the scene where he's, like, helping Luke Cage out of prison, and he's, like, people call me Foggy, and Luke Cage goes, and you let them? That's a great line. Doug Petrie, you know, we should note, has a, you know, he's a Joss Whedon acolyte, a Buffy guy, so I like when the Buffy people work on, or he might be just an Angel guy, but he's an OG Whedonverse guy, and I really like it when the Buffy people work on the series, as they did with Daredevil Season 1. So, do we want to get to Twitter questions? Do we want to say more?
I have a Twitter question that also informs one of my opinions of the show.
All right.
Which is sort of a middling opinion, I guess. Anyway, but we got this from M. Colby, who goes by @thehighstinkin'. Great. Just great. they ask, why does camera work make me seasick and static shots are so wonky? It looks like even the DP was bored with every scene. This really gets to one of the number one thing I thought of when I was watching The Defenders is that there's a lot of distraction going on. And maybe you guys can help me like figure out why, but visually they do a lot of things that sort of distract from what's going on. There's a lot of action things during the action sequences that sort of distract us. And what it seems like they're hiding is Karen Page scenes that are shot at Dutch angles. And it also, one of the things that I wondered about later was why each character really didn't get to sort of show off their own powers more. Like, I feel like their individual series really gave them opportunities to, like, show what those powers are and what they do. You know, we got to sort of see what Matt Murdock sees, and in Jessica Jones, we get to sort of see her strength, and you know, Luke Cage was all about getting shot with explosive bullets and stuff like that. But I didn't really feel that even in the action sequences. Like, there's that fun hallway sequence, which I guess we now have to call a Petrie Ramirez sequence because they just keep doing it. But they all fought like it was just a bunch of people having a fist fight. And very rarely did you get a really good sense of what they were doing. So I felt like the show did a lot of visual stuff that distracted us from what it wasn't doing. I can't tell if that's good or bad or...
Yeah, that hallway fight, which spills out from the boardroom fight, which is starts with Danny and Luke fighting. I liked it because it felt really coherent to me, especially after... And watching Finn Jones actually like fight not in slow motion, but real time. You know, like it just, I was like, oh, Finn Jones can move. That wasn't his fault last season. Like that's what that scene meant to me. You know, and Finn Jones has said in interviews that like when he did the choreography for Iron Fist, they were like learning it on the day and all sorts. Like he was set up to fail in a number of ways for Iron Fist, I think. But
they didn't give him a mask, which would have easily solved the problem and let stunt people do it.
Yeah, exactly.
They did figure out that they could put his hood up.
But yes. I liked the boardroom hallway fight, though you're right that they didn't distinguish between the different styles very well at all. And maybe it's a challenge because Jessica like really doesn't – like she has that great line where she's like, does everyone know Kung Fu now or something like that? Like because Jessica doesn't – and the same is true of the Chinese restaurant fight. You know what I mean? Like they're all fighting together and it should be really cool. And maybe as the – if and when they team up more, we could see more of what I loved in like Avatar, like Legend of Korra and stuff like that, where you see different fighting styles, you know, to let you know if you've never watched Avatar is like, or the M. Night Shyamalan movie is like, you've got waterbenders and firebenders and blah, blah, blah. So like to see every fight felt like a really creative exercise and like, how can we make these different fighting styles, like show them off in a fight? Like it was really creative. Granted, they were working with animation, so it was a lot easier. All that being said, the last thing I want to say about fights is that like I actually left the room in the middle of that gibberish incomprehensible fight before they go down to the basement when they're in like I don't know a warehouse sort of thing and it's Madame Gao.
Oh, they're in the garage.
Yeah, that was shot like incomprehensibly and I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter. I was like, I'll just leave and when I come back I'll figure out who won. Oh, it's a draw, cool. But Colleen's here now, all right, that's fine. I was just like, this is irresponsibly shot. And the same thing is like in when they get down into, you know, the underground Dragonbone cave scene, there's like a lot of, there's at least a couple tracking shots where they're trying to like track it through all the action in the dark and kind of trying to show you what different people can do. Danny's glowing fist is a helpful marker, but it still felt like really incomprehensible to me. So really that hallway fight, I think, is where the action peaked. I think it was either Matt or Luke, probably not Jessica, who said like light it up Danny, right? Like didn't that happen at one point? That's a cool thing. Like that's the kind of thing that should be happening, like, you know, light him up, or Luke occasionally like stepping in front of a gun or like whatever, you know, to protect Danny, like Danny's little tiny skinny frame cowering behind Luke as he takes all the bullets. Like that's cool. But you're right, Neil, I think that they didn't do enough of like making those all work together.
I could see where a lot of this came from because the Defenders is really visually ambitious with its colors and lighting, and which is something different that we've seen from these showrunners on Daredevil, where they really embraced only darkness and occasionally red. But where all these guys seem to really shine in assembling action is when they purposefully limit their space. And it really helps them bring a cohesion to it. I think what the problem with the Dragon Cave fight is you're trying to show off all these fighting styles, but that makes you look away from the actual logistics that you're all in this giant, big brawling cave. And like, nobody's going to have time to individually do the pose thing. They all have to be beating the crap out of each other as fast as possible. And then you have to default to four characters who basically all of them, if you were to have briefly some of their powers, they're all good at punching people in some different way. And you have to do it in a way that doesn't take away from the fact that they're all going to get second seasons. So you can't do Captain American Civil War, Giant Man, and unveil a new power, because that's really not your responsibility and they are not planning for you to do that. So the show has to operate in the maximum amount it can deliver to you is the novelty of seeing these characters together, because if it extends any further out from that, then it's sort of taking away from what the next series could have to establish about a character rather than capitalizing on the series leading into this, which is like, this is basically supposed to be a payoff, comma, you know, we're done with the hand, we are moving on to other things. but it can't be, I don't think, a character climax for everybody, which is why I think we see Daredevil alive instead of leaving like a Jon Snow cliffhanger, is because that cliffhanger is for a Daredevil series. It's not for the Defenders.
I really appreciated that they showed him alive at the end, because I really liked that too about Elektra, when they killed Elektra in Daredevil season 2. And I was like, please don't pretend like you're not bringing her back. And then they're like, we're bringing her back. And I was like, thank you. Like, we don't need it. We don't need that cliffhanger.
It's crazy what happens when you don't do stupid cliffhangers. But people don't have to do math about how fast the wall fell.
what the blunt force trauma of dragon bones hitting you on the head as your cave collapses in on top of you would be. I'm trying to think, like, what would be, you know, the example that I keep thinking of is in Wonder Woman, even though in Wonder Woman, like, the group fight scenes is one super and a bunch of normies fighting, that whole, like, part in Wonder Woman, spoiler for Wonder Woman, during the battle, the, like, defending of the town, when they do like the shield and the lift and all of that, that's a working together, like your strength, my strength sort of thing. And I was like, what do I want to see? And I'm like, I feel like I want to see, I don't know, like Luke Cage spinning Danny Rand around with his fist out, just clocking guys. Like, what's a good combination of these? How can like someone set him? It's just like, here, I'll punch him really hard and then you punch him really hard. Like, there's no, I don't know how they could like set him up to knock him down, you know. So
I'm sure there are ways. It's just they probably end up looking like pro wrestling moves, yeah, or something. Like Jessica just throws people at Luke Cage, you just like punches them into the ground. I do think that they recognize that problem, because basically the climax of the superpower action part of the series is Jessica has super strength, which we sort of knew, but it was only used once in a Jessica has super strength sort of way. Like, even with the car, she's just sort of like pushes the car through the window. It's not like we see her use her super strength. So it's like everybody had a certain amount of time to dole out how awesome they could be. And the final one is Jessica could hold an elevator
with Luke Cage and Danny in it. Like, yeah, it looks great.
It worked out really well. But I think they also, like, since that was her thing, they didn't use enough of the fact that she could basically jump fly, which I was expecting to come up.
She can jump fly?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We saw that in the first season.
Yeah, so I think they did set out with some limitations of things they weren't going to touch. Like, we didn't really get any sort of Kilgrave fallout outside of picking up with Jessica, and she still hasn't healed, because that's for Jessica Jones season 2. So it's a difficult thing to juggle overall, and I do think it has like its problems, but the first time through watching it get to that boardroom fight was like sort of anti-Netflix. So what, even though it fell back into its old patterns, like being like, oh man, so the worst character just decided to just go up and talk to Sigourney Weaver, and it all happens while organically, through detective methods, caring about a black kid and being a lawyer, the rest of our characters got to the same building. I'm like, fuck yeah, Netflix Defenders.
Yeah.
The problem is it could have been a 5-episode series and been nonstop awesomeness.
Four. I agree. And that's not, I mean, like, cut all your
They're
people.
They're all too long, no matter how long they are.
I mean, yeah. And then
here's the thing. No one cares about how the hand works. I'm glad I did have the complaint, how does the hand works? And I guess it's nice to note there are 5 fingers and they all sort of work for dragon bone stuff. But
it at least explains why the hell they're called the hand, because I was wondering that one. I was like, what the hell does that even mean?
But yeah, it seems weird. And then like the fact they have to keep masking it for another hour by being like, don't forget who you serve. And it's like, oh yes, I serve the inside of dragon bones. Is there a god of death that we're going to talk about? Because we don't talk about anything actually supernatural.
Is it dragon bone cartilage? Is that what it is?
Do you think the cartilage would rot away though? On like they're like cutting out the setters of it. So like
marrow,
dragon marrow.
Yeah, dragon marrow. Yes. So
wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
So if the hand has been using this stuff, the substance, to stay alive forever, or for hundreds of years or whatever. Is that the same dragon that Danny Rand killed?
No.
No.
Okay, good. Because I was like, for a second, I was like, do they mean me to think that that's the dragon that he killed? And
no, I think they've been like plundering dragon carcasses around the world, and this is the last one, and it's locked behind this thing that they needed Danny Rand to punch open for them, right?
So I think New York is built on top of like a Kunlun type society that used to have dragons, but it got sealed off. And that's where the final fight was supposed to take place, I think.
Now I just want to see a Reign of Fire 2 that's about New York, where the defenders have to fight dragons.
Okay, wait, question. Oh, does the Danny Elector work stuff work for you guys? It works really well for me, and I think I'm in the minority. There are other people it doesn't work for. So what do you guys think?
You mean like the climax stuff by the pool of black?
I mean, kind of all of it, like Sigourney Weaver ordering Matt's death being like kind of what turns Elektra against her. The scene where Elektra like goes to his apartment and like curls up in his bed, and like, and then him just like refusing to acknowledge logic and just continually trying to save her rather than walk away from her.
You mean the Matt Elektra stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, what did I say? Danny?
Danny Elektra stuff.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Which they do fight, and they try to draw a parallel between the two of them, but I didn't think that necessarily worked.
No. Yeah, Matt and Elektra. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I mean, I'm happy that we don't have to spend Daredevil 3, Season 3, doing Daredevil Season 2 again because the Defenders exists, if that makes any sense. And then I'm also happy that this storyline didn't end up in Daredevil Season 2, because it's sort of a replay of Elektra's choice at the end of Daredevil Season 2. Like, that one scene where she's like, I'm with the hand, no, I'm with Matt, no, I'm with the hand, no, I'm with Matt. And it happens, like, within 20 minutes of each other. That's sort of how this could have played, but I think because it's abbreviated, I didn't mind it. I have talked to people who think that there's a little bit too much solo Elektra content in the Defenders. Like, we don't need to see the bed curling up scene.
Oh, I like that scene.
Maybe
I couldn't tell exactly why she went back to the bed. Was it more, this is the place I almost died, or this is the place I last had sex? I can't tell which one sort of permeated her amnesia.
I think it was not sex, but like, this is where I felt like loved as a human sort of thing.
Oh, it's all mushy. I was like,
I think so. Like, this is her most, because
if you died and came back, where would you go?
Even before she was evil, like, Elektra was a problematic human, but like, Danny was the thing. I'm sorry, I keep saying that. Matt was the thing that like made her the most inclined to follow her better impulses, her most human impulses.
Yeah, and you found deeper meaning in all this than I did.
I do. I think the Elektra Matt stuff is really good.
I like some of the solo Elektra stuff as well. Like, even some of the just like her in the hands compound building. Some of that stuff was great. And then the first time they fight in the in the office building, I thought was great as well.
Yeah, so anything that involves Sigourney Weaver's character, I'm definitely on board of enough to like say it deserves to be in the series. After that, there's the problem of creating a Sigourney Weaverless climax while only having Elektra being your compelling villain, and then still having like a team of people, which leads to the garage fight scene that you're talking about, where they're like, we know this needs to happen. We need to have Sword Guy and other Sword Guy and Madame Gao.
I think Madame Gao is compelling though, like especially her scenes with Sigourney. The Bakuto and the other Sword Guy, like, I could take or leave. I could take or leave three of the fingers of the hand. Those guys are just like, hey.
I'm just more of a thumb and pinky kind of guy.
Yeah, it's just like a hang loose situation as far as I'm concerned. But, like, I don't know. That's been a feature, of the Marvel Netflix, all of them, like, even in Daredevil Season 1, you have these mini-bosses, and that's what, like they tried to make Bakuto something more because of his connection to Colleen, fine. But these two other rando people that they just introduced in this series. Like, they were cool. Like, I thought they were kind of cool and interesting, but like, you could put a 9 guns to my head and I could never tell you what their names were. So, you know.
Although Bakudo goes down as the one who did the most awesome thing, which was cut off Misty Knight's arm so that she could have a sweet ass bionic arm in
bionic
the future.
Bionic arm!
Yeah.
Yeah. We got that payoff.
That's true.
Didn't get any Bullseye or any Kingpin, which is unfortunate, but what are you going to do?
Well, I'd rather that than like the like sort of limp Kingpin cameo from Daredevil season 2.
I thought I would rather have an idea that the Kingpin exists in the universe of these other characters than Madame Gao.
Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
Kingpin is better than Madame Gao. I just like Madame Gao. Did you not like her? I mean, I like specifically her interactions with Sigourney Weaver. I thought those were specifically good. And as like,
yeah, I wasn't as big of a fan of her like being Yoda during the fight scenes.
Yeah, agreed. But like the politics of like what happens when there are 5 immortals and one of them is kind of the boss. Right? Like I thought the Game of Thrones stuff between the 5 fingers was interesting. And like, I kind of wish that I had watched them for a while now. Like we've had Madame Gao for a while, but I wish we had had like, if not Sigourney Weaver, then the other 4 sort of like interacting and scheming and that's, you know, they were trying to Littlefinger their way like through this whole thing, basically, you know. So I don't know.
I mean, I guess I kind of like the premise of we're immortal and we're out of immortality juice because we spent it on Elektra. Also the interactions between these 4 characters really draws out that they should have been seated earlier. And the only one we really got.
Wait, I have another question.
A lot of background on was Madame Gao.
Yeah.
Yes, Neil.
So if the immortality juice comes from dragon bones, why the hell did they need all that blood from like virgins in, what was it, Daredevil season 2? Which was the one where
they were taking the blood in? I think they were taking the blood in Iron Fist, and we assumed it was to resurrect Elektra. But
no,
I think
they were taking
like,
the blood in Daredevil season 2, right?
I think either
I
way,
have
they
no
needed
memory of a virgin hunt. Were they killing virgins and taking blood?
No, it was like teenagers. I was just assuming it was virgins.
I mean, I know that they were drawing blood from people at Bushido's hand camp.
Blood draining. But yeah, they were doing it. Why is the hand draining blood in Daredevil season 2?
I think it's like, it's part blood, part goop. Like, whatever she comes out.
Part substance.
I can't imagine that whatever Elektra comes out of is entirely liquefied dragon bones. That's
yeah,
because
we see them getting the blood out of the young people from the millennials. And the millennial blood goes into the coffin where Elektra wakes up at the end of Daredevil season 2.
Right. I think it's like a cocktail, a dragon bone blood cocktail.
And we're also to assume that Nobu.
That's like the most Game of Thrones thing I've said on this podcast.
What was it? Blood cocktail.
Dragon bone blood cocktail. King's blood and dragon bone.
I like how much crossover there is. This is a good like moving into easing into the off season.
Did you have that Twitter question about Cersei that we got?
Yes. Hold on, I will pull it up.
It's related to this, I promise.
Crossover tweets.
Do you say Bushido and you meant Bakudo, or did you mean Bushido?
Wait, there are
which
those
one's
are
the
two
sword
different
guy?
Things?
Which one's the style?
Oh, okay, I get you. Bakudo is like. It's really odd that he's...
Doesn't Bakudo teach Bushido?
Yeah, yeah.
Bushido?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's why it's the fucking...
Oh, here you go.
Iron Fist is crap.
Twitter question from Spencer Gilman at GilmanSG13. Did Cersei killing Danny Rand somehow make him the Iron Fist? And if so, is that the worst thing she's ever done?
Yes.
Hey, guys, have you heard that he's the immortal Iron Fist? Just in case
I like
you forgot.
There's hope for Game of Thrones characters that didn't get their due on Game of Thrones in a second season of The Immortal Iron Fist. we just haven't got there.
Here's another crossover question.
We should be careful what we're wishing for. They're going to cast that kid who played Ollie as like a
how dare you. That kid
main
is,
character
I
Iron Fist.
Guarantee you that kid is not... I don't guarantee you, but here's what I'll say. If I were that kid, I'd be like, screw you, acting career.
Never again.
Bullied by randos? No, thank you. One other crossover question for me. How much more would you have liked the Defender series, Dave, if the Iron Fist from Twin Peaks were in it instead of Danny Rand?
Oh, tons more.
Okay.
Because he would have been like, and then I can't do his accent, but then he'd be like, the fireman told me to be here, and I'm the immortal Iron Fist.
Hello, Pip Pip, I've got a fist I can punch you with. It's got a green glove on it.
It's good because he's a blue-collar Iron Fist, and blue-collar Iron Fists don't have all the baggage.
It's true. The working man's hero.
I did like that they figured out that Danny Rand was rich, like, halfway through. They were like, oh, right, he's super rich. He could just pay for stuff.
We completely forgot that his first season was a boardroom drama instead of an action show.
Yeah, I love how he gave that restaurant owner, like, you know, he paid the rent for like 6 months or whatever. But like, is he now going to have to rebuild his entire restaurant? Yes.
Well, then he also owns the hospital that Misty's in at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay.
But that makes sense. That's probably just like Rand Memorial Hospital or something like that. You know?
Yeah, but that's also how she gets the sweet arm.
Yeah.
Because they can't
make
do Tony Stark.
Tony Stark of the Netflix series.
Okay.
We need something from Rand Tech.
Honestly, if he was like a slow... if he became the Tony Stark of this universe, it probably would be better. Because I think that if they're going to take that character in one direction or another, it should be more insufferable.
Yeah,
I like the idea of
the
like
worst.
He's the worst Iron Fist.
Yeah,
the worst Iron Fist should be the title of his next season.
That character should be the butt of every joke.
We've already made ostensibly two podcasts about how Danny Rand's the worst now, so he obviously is.
Yeah, and if they embrace the fact that he's the worst, he could be the best.
Can it be called the infamous Iron Fist?
The infamous Iron Fist.
All right, do you have any other questions, Neil, before we roll into look into the future?
No, some of these are for the future.
Okay.
Oh, wait, hold on. Here's a good one.
Yes.
This one's quick, too. This is from Ryan George at Xeno Irish. Okay. Is there a reason they don't call Daredevil Daredevil? They call one character the Black Sky, so it's not like weird names aren't used. Do you guys know? I assumed when I read this question and thought about it for the first time ever, I assumed that the Daredevil, he doesn't like to go by Daredevil. He's cool with the Devil of Hell's Kitchen, but like, he's not, like, Daredevil's not his in-universe name.
They don't call Luke Cage Power Man either, right? Like,
right.
I think it's because the Devil of Hell's Kitchen sounds better.
It sounds cooler in-universe.
Yeah, the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. I would not rebrand that. What do you think?
Also, they changed, like, the Daredevil thing came from the fact that, you know, he's a blind guy who does acrobatics, and they've changed it to be more fight heavy than acrobatic heavy. Like, he does a little parkour running up the occasional fire escape, but he's not the Daredevil of the comics who's swinging around on lampposts and pirouetting all the time. He's more of a brawler in this version.
Right, he's a parkour guy.
Yeah. But I mean, eventually they're gonna like call him Daredevil, but like, season one of Daredevil is Daredevil gets a costume. I mean, it's a lot of other things, but that's what it is superhero-wise. And then he's still the only one who has the costume. So he's the most superhero-y of the superheroes. But yeah, I'd love to see him embrace being Daredevil. I think if we want to use this as a way to segue into the future, I have a cool way that could happen.
Yeah.
Do it.
All right. So here's the thing. I want Danny Rand to put on the Daredevil costume.
Is that a thing that's happened in the comics?
Oh, yeah. Lots of people put on the Daredevil costume when Matt gets in a stitch. I mean, Peter Parker, obviously. An adult
stitch.
Peter Parker.
Oh, there's a spot of bother up in Hell's Kitchen.
You're the one who brought Cockney Iron Fist in. Now it's just stuck in my head forever. But yeah, so like occasionally Peter Parker will get in the outfit, and then Iron Fist has been in the outfit before. But here, The end of The Defenders is visually hinting that Daredevil Season 3 is going to be the Born Again arc, which is a Mark Miller arc, which is about sort of the Kingpin attacking Daredevil as Matt Murdock. And so he has to, you know, deal with the fact that his life is sort of being upended very publicly. So wouldn't that be a perfect time to have a Devil of Hell's Kitchen running around in the costume that's also fighting for you while you're secretly being
Matt
Murdock?
Matt is like, I was in court at the time. I don't know what to tell you.
I've been here all day. Also, I'm blind.
Was there something glowing happening underneath that glove? I don't know. It's definitely not me. Who knows?
But I think there's a ton of ways to not do an Iron Fist season 2, but to still use all of these characters in a continuing Netflix series.
Well, yeah, you could do an Iron Fist or Power Man and Iron Fist, right?
Yeah, you could do Power Man and Iron Fist. You could do the all-girl the detective series you were talking about. You could even add Jessica Jones into that if Jessica Jones season 2 sort of closes off that solo arc. I think there's a lot of ways to mix this up and start telling comic book stories, but be a little bit more freeing in the fact that you could exchange cast members between these individual lines, like how Karen's a Punisher character now.
Is she going to be in Punisher?
She's going to be in Punisher first season.
Great. Two bad tastes that taste bad together, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Joanna, you don't have to watch it.
I know. Thank you. I feel so liberated. I'm not going to. Can you talk about how, okay, so the series ends with Matt not having died in a pile of rubble, but waking up in sort of a convent sort of situation. So, Dave, can you explain to those of us in the back of the room who are dumb, like, how that sets up the Born Again storyline?
So, essentially, the Born Again storyline involves one of these covers that is what's being visually aped on screen, where Matt's being healed by his mother, who's a nun. So basically this storyline deals with Matt also figuring out about his mom.
Is her name Martha?
Maggie.
Mm. Close enough. Yeah.
Almost. But a lot of these things can be changed with adaptations because Ben Ehrlich.
Oh shit,
Ehrlich,
what's Punisher's mom's name? Is it Maggie?
That would be a really easy way to get those two on the same side. But the idea is that, and then the Kingpin is also the one who's going after Daredevil's reputation, which they could still do. Karen Page, unfortunately, at this point, is addicted to drugs and a porn star, and she's the one that sells Matt Murdock's real name in exchange for drugs. That probably won't happen. Captain America is in Born Again. That probably won't happen. But so is Nuke, who is the blonde guy from Jessica Jones who was taking the pills. Yeah. So that would be a good chance to yank that character over. And I'm always a fan of bringing in more comic book characters, and especially Spider-Man villains that were Kingpin henchmen that could now be transported over to Daredevil. So like a Tombstone or something, I think would be fun. I think there's a lot of
What's
stuff you could
tombstone?
Do with Daredevil.
What does he do?
He's a giant guy who's like flat top on Dick Tracy head. So he has a tombstone shaped head. He's just giant. Mm. He likes to beat the crap out of people. I think there's a back to basics approach now that the hand has been removed. So basically the arc of the Netflix series thus far has been like you start off street level crime detective-y, and then we ramped up into magic dragon bones and deathless ninjas. And now I'm hoping that the pivot out of the hand is a time to come back into actual criminals, because we have, I mean, the stuff I like the most about early Defenders in each one of their individual storylines is I like that Jessica Jones actually has detective work to do. So I'm looking forward to Jessica Jones season 2 actually pivoting back to a detective show. I think it would feel weird if everything is on the level of Dragon Bones going forward. But we'll see. Yeah. David Tennant's supposed to star Jessica Jones season 2.
Oh, is he?
So
yeah, it would be good to, like,
we don't know how that's going
to
happen.
It would be good to ramp it back down. Right?
Yeah.
Like, just take it back down to the street, which is sort of the whole pitch of the Defenders in the first place, is they're street-level heroes. It would be cool to have David Tennant, like, only in her head. That would be kind of cool, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's the most prevalent theory that's sort of going around, is that he still sort of exists in her mind.
That would be cool.
which he exists in everyone's mind, so
yeah,
it's not nothing new for me, I guess.
Well, then you get to go back to the whole support group that, you know, the idea that trauma is never really over, which is Jessica Jonesy, which is great. Well, I mean, not that the fact of it isn't great, but it's a good way to build a superhero television show. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the color stuff they do in The Defenders. I hope they lean into that sort of idea that they could do something visually. It didn't occur to me until seeing The Defenders that the Daredevil showrunners are really the only people trying to do that. Not that Luke Cage didn't have parts that were beautiful, but I don't think that the entire thing was as cohesively put together as colors for each character, or in the case of Daredevil, how you're going to use light as sparsely as possible to enhance like stunt work and atmosphere. I'd like to see all of that go. I mean, what am I saying? That's really... I'm worried about how fast this can pivot, because if I've learned anything about Marvel properties on three prongs, the Netflix's show's ability to react to its audience is going to end up being the thing that it can do best. The fact that The Punisher was received well enough that now he has a series is so much better than we saw Avengers 1, wondered why there wasn't a Black Widow movie, and we don't get a female-led movie until Captain Marvel. Like, that amount of turnaround, I'm not convinced it's always bullshit intentions from misogynist people who are part of maybe Marvel Publishing, but it's also how long the process takes to turn around. So the Netflix series could actually take all these things, like knowing that Jessica Jones is the highest streamed one and seeing how The Defenders performs, and turn it into the remaining 70 episodes they have a deal for. And I think that they'll have a better time doing that than something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will keep trying to keep up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, yeah. It's really easy to trade characters here in Netflix. It's really easy to have plots interweave and sort of feel like you need to go on to another series. But because they're also these like wide superhero archetypes, it's easy to make these, you know, bingeable single seasons that don't necessarily have to connect everything. You don't have to know all the Infinity Stones, which is, you know, nice.
So what you're
going to have to know all the Infinity Stones eventually.
So what you're saying is that it's we could see a Daughters of the Dragon or Power Man and Iron Fist are more likely because they're on Netflix and not part of a cinematic universe.
Exactly.
Yes. Like, I got it. I was listening.
Good. Yes. And I think it's going to be, if they learn to lean into that, I think it's going to end up working out. So, in conclusion, Neil,
yes,
and Dave both think that more crossovers in the Netflix universe are possible, but that's not what we know that we're getting in the future. We know that we're getting a Punisher season. We got a teaser for that at the end of The Defenders. We know we're getting a Jessica Jones season 2. We know we're getting a Luke Cage season 2. And we know we're getting a Daredevil season 3. But no Netflix yet. No Netflix Iron Fist season 2 yet, which is why we're hoping crossovers happen in that space. It'd be good space for crossovers.
Yeah, I want to see them get weird. Just get weird. It's fine.
Also, like, there's nothing wrong with transplanting a character even more, you know, like they did with Luke Cage in the first season of Jessica Jones. Like, transplant a character in a more significant way than they have been doing. So, you know, like, having, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier is a Captain America movie, but it's basically a Captain America Black Widow movie. You know what I mean? So, like, you could have Daredevil season 3 with Jessica Jones as his, like, main sidekick if you wanted to. You have the power. As long as the contracts are all signed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you pretty much have them under contract, so yeah.
And then
whatever.
I like Neil's idea to get weird, because if I could prescribe another thing for the Defenders, I said go back to crime, but I think Netflix is a great place for characters like Blade or Ghost Rider or something that, you know, actually makes Matt's vision of a heaven and a hell real and physical, but could also get some weirder things in there. So not necessarily Dragon Bones, but characters dedicating to pushing that idea forward, like how Thor's participation in the Avengers pushes forward the idea that mythology is just science we don't necessarily understand. I like the idea of expanding the universe out into that, but slowly and after you let these characters sort of mingle in crossovers.
I'm definitely for Jessica Jones discovering that there are vampires.
Yes.
Oh my god, becoming Jessica a Blade Jones thing. And Blade. Oh, that'd be great.
I know. How great would that be?
Can we dreamcast Blade really quickly?
Sure.
It would still You're be just gonna... Wesley Snipes.
Still Wesley Snipes.
Still Wesley Snipes.
Just he's like an old Blade. I don't know. I mean, Michael B. Jordan would be pretty great, but he's already a character in Marvel now. So
he's already so many superheroes.
He's all the he's actually two Marvel characters already.
Yeah.
It didn't stop one of the Chrises.
True.
I can't think of a good. Well, I'm sure we could figure it out.
Okay.
Who should be Blade? But they'll probably find a good relative unknown, like Mike Coulter for Luke Cage. Or even Charlie Cox, when he became Daredevil, was unknown to people who didn't watch Downton Abbey.
That's Stardust?
He was in Stardust.
Boardwalk Empire? Charlie Cox on Downton Abbey?
What about... Okay, wasn't it's completely on Downton different Abbey? Than Wesley Snipes.
Oh, maybe it was complete... Maybe it was Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Lakeith Stanfield.
Even though
I would like him to be the Joker like he wants to be in the Martin Scorsese movie, if we're going to get him, his take on Blade would be different than the Wesley Snipes take
like
on
hipster
Blade, I think would be important. Yeah, I think that's important.
Oh, Charlie Cox was on Boardwalk Empire.
What about Shameik Moore, who was like super good in The Get Down, and now Netflix is like, sorry, your other series was a complete mess, but you were really good in it. So,
and he actually kind of looks like a more wiry Wesley Snipes anyway.
Yeah, I'm into it. Shameik Moore.
Yeah.
Blade. Get on it, Netflix. Jeff
and
Loeb,
Wesley
I know you listen to this podcast.
Play...
Make it
Wesley...
up.
Loeb.
Wesley Snipes could play the Kris Kristofferson character.
Nice. As long as they get Jessica Biel back, that's all I care.
And Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, Rai is not busy doing anything else. So Rai,
I mean, honestly, this is where I really want the contractual obligations to go away, because you really kind of do want Deadpool and Jessica Jones in an episode of something together.
That'd be great.
Yep, just cursing at each other.
Ugh. All right.
Oh.
So this.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, we did it.
Oh. We did it. That was the Defenders.
That's the Defenders.
That's what the off-season tour is like. We talked about a lot of other things that are, you know, crackpotitude brought to what we're talking about, which in this case was Marvel.
Yeah.
Which we ended up casting Blade. That's the kind of craziness that happens on every episode, regardless of what we're talking about.
Of the off-season tour.
Off-season tour. We always fan cast Blade on every episode.
And somehow it's always still Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes. Tax-paying Wesley Snipes these days.
Yeah.
Twitter present Wesley Snipes. Snipes might actually be listening to this podcast.
I love Snipes on Twitter, I have to say. I'm into it.
Bring back the Blade. All right, guys. Until our next episode, which will be our usual Wednesday, where we talk about the... full season 7 of Game of Thrones and what we're looking forward to season 8. Where can people find your work on the internet? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me talking about award season, which is heating up over on Little Gold Men. And otherwise, I'm just going to be living my life, man.
And Neil Miller.
You can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on the Twitter at Rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers, or email us if you have questions, comments, or otherwise, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. And a quick shout to everybody who, I feel like we gained a lot of new listeners who hopefully will stick around through the off-season tour. But if you guys ever have questions about what music is being played at the end of our episodes, go to stormofspoilers.com, and that information is there.
Yeah, on each post, I'll put the ending song for your searching enjoyment replay. Searching enjoyment. Not good with words here. Dave Gonzalez. I'm on Twitter at DA7E. Write some stuff at Thrillist.com. Podcast some stuff at FightingInTheWarRoom.com. And looking forward to spending another year plus whispering off-season tour into your sweet ears. See you next week.
Not creepy at all, my friend. Not even.
On brand. Hashtag on brand creepiness.
On brand creepy. Gonna walk around Count of Thrones recording.
Let me record your screams.
We put in practice and discipline. No giving up, no giving in. We're match fit, we're here to win. For those who don't know, but a filament, information. We're the realest out here, no imitation. Been all around the world, no immigration. And we get it in without any invitation. Sound travels.